What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Friday edition of the show. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, of course, is Thomas Drance. He covers the team at The Athletic as well. We're coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? Canucks Talk brought to you by the Hockey Shop in Langley. It's a great day for hockey. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show today on a Friday, as always. We'll talk to Dimitri later on in the show. We got a big win to break down. I want to give a shout out to our producer, Lena. Next man up mentality here at Canucks Talk. Lena, when's the last time you ran the board here, Lena?
It's got to be a long time.
So kudos to you. She's stepping up. We're short-handed today. Lena's stepping up and putting in an extra shift.
Lena is Pugh Suter, right? I was trying to make the comparison that you were.
They're going to do a Linus Carlson reference somehow.
I was trying to go
Lena Carlson Satakian.
Yeah, exactly. And I just stumbled over the first word.
We're all stumbling tonight.
Nailed it.
Look, if Lena's Pugh Suter, I'm Artur Shelov's, or I don't know, whoever didn't step up in the absence over the last 10 games.
All right. Now, as I mentioned, we got a lot to get into today, and it's also a very special day at the station. We do this every year. It is Food Bank Friday. So we're partnering with our sister stations here at the Rogers Radio Building, 1130 News Radio, Sonic, Jack 96.9, all teaming up for Food Bank Friday to support the Greater Vancouver Food Banks. Most important information here, there's a couple of different ways you can donate. There's an online virtual link. If you go to our website, sportsnet.ca/650, you'll be able to find the link. The other way you can donate, you can text the carrot emoji to 30333. So that's 30333. Text the carrot emoji. You'll be able to donate your choice of $5, $10, or $25. And we say this every year, but again, the purchasing power of the Greater Vancouver Food Bank, cash goes so much farther than donations of your food items you have around the house, right? And that's especially true for fresh items. For non-fresh items, they have a buying power of about 2-1, which is already really impressive. That can go all the way up to 15-1 buying power on fresh items. And those are obviously a lot harder to source. So donating your money can go a long way. The food bank here in Greater Vancouver supports more than 15,000 people monthly across Vancouver, Burnaby, New West, and the North Shore. They're registering 500 plus new clients each month. So there's a need, there's a demand, and this is a great way to help. I know it's the holiday season and that, you know, you might not have a lot of extra money to donate, but if you do, if you are able, this is a really fantastic cause. Also really pleased to announce that we've already raised more than $30,000 today as of the last 11:45 was the last update. So we'll keep updating you throughout the show, but already over $30,000, some great matching donations from some donors that I'll give a shout out to a little bit later on in the show. And you can get in on the action. Text the carrot emoji 30333 for your chance or for your opportunity to participate in Food Bank Friday and help us raise some money for the food bank. Okay, we'll keep tabs on that. Tell you more about that later on in the show as well. But right now, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, December 13th. We'll start with the headline. The Canucks beat the defending Stanley Cup champions, the Florida Panthers, 4-0 at Rogers Arena. And man, did that game check a lot of boxes for the Canucks. Most notably, something you and I have talked about, something a lot of people in this market have talked a lot about. Finally, they get a signature performance, a convincing, impressive identity win over a high-quality opponent. It happened on home ice as well, and given what talking point their home record has been, that's really important as well. But, man, that feels like just what the doctor ordered for this Canucks team at this point of the season.
It was impressive, without question. They were focused. They were on it early. They were on top of the Panthers. This is really what stood out to me was, you know, I was concerned about the mobility, and I'll capitulate. it didn't matter. Now, some people have misconstrued it as a Friedman take.
Small C capitulate or?
No, all caps. but all caps. That was their best game as a 1-6 defensive unit all season. Not close, by the way. They moved the puck crisply. How many times there was like one play where a Canucks defender makes a good defensive play, takes a step over the blue line and quickly ices the puck, which has been like one of Vancouver's set breakouts at times this season. It happened once last night. They moved the puck crisply. They moved it effectively. They got it deep. Were able to establish their forecheck. They made the Panthers look slow, and they completely busted up the Panthers' pressure game, which is their bread and butter. Right, it's why until Nico Mikkola walked in on Kevin Lankinen late in the third period, like the Panthers didn't really have much in the way of high caliber scoring chances to speak of. And at that point, it was 3-0, and there was only 10 minutes left in the game.
Yeah,
and it was Nico Mikkola. So, I thought it was just a wonderful team game from the Canucks. They played almost perfect hockey. I actually even wonder if Rick Tocchet might have put something. This might have been one of those games where Rick Tocchet might have put something on tape in terms of how to contain the Panthers.
Oh, interesting.
Pressure game. Like, I'd watch to see if the Panthers maybe hit a speed bump here and have to make some adjustments. You get these from, there's like 6 or 7 coaches that can do this, where you've got a team that no one has solved for a bit, and then someone kind of does, and then everyone replicates it, and then the team has to adjust. The Canucks played so well last night that I wonder if Tocchet Cassidy'd Paul Maurice.
Yeah.
Like that's how good they were. Loved Mark Friedman's game, loved Max Sisson's game. Thought there was a lot. Well, Kevin Lankinen was great, but also I think this was a team shutout. Yep. I don't think this was a goaltender shutout. Paul Maurice said as much. Like, there was a quote from Paul Maurice where he's like, I'm not sitting here thinking, oh man, if only
we got goalied.
If not for the goalie. Like, he knew the score. He knew his team wasn't close to good enough. In fact, he had another quote where he mentioned that the Canucks got them off the rush for 3 goals. The Panthers don't give up rush goals, he said, that those were on our sticks. That's on us. Aside from that, it was like watching paint dry. And I think he meant it as a compliment.
Yes.
I think we should take it as a compliment, even though, you know, given the dump and chase discussion in this market over the last week, maybe you could spin it another way if you were so inclined.
Well, but if you can marry, like, you know, 55 minutes of the game being like watching paint dry to being able to strike dangerously off the rush when the opportunities are there, people will take that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not that you're going to get 3 goals off of every game, but it's like, okay, at least there's a winning formula there. And I agree. I mean, is there a higher compliment a coach can pay to another coach than he made it like watching paint dry, right? No one loves watching paint dry more than NHL head coaches. They are huge fans of it. So
yeah,
if you can turn a game against the Panthers to a low event slog, that's a good thing from your coach.
You're right. NHL head coaches saw the excitement of 3-on-3 hockey and we're like, what if we turned it into a possession
guys,
game?
We gotta figure this out. This is killing us. This is way too exciting.
What if we won the faceoff and then just held the puck for 2 minutes? It's like, no. God. Every NFL, or sorry, every NHL head coach is the Chiefs offense. Anyway, look, there was nothing to not like about that Canucks performance up and down the line.
So this question comes in, and I was doing the intermissions with Bick, and we got similar questions a couple of times in the first, after the first and second periods. This one just simple, unsigned. Did the Panthers play well? And I don't know about this texture, but we definitely got questions last night, which was along the lines of like, well, is this actually an impressive performance from the Canucks, or are the Panthers just not performing up to expectations? And
don't
in
say
the
it.
NHL,
don't say it.
What?
Don't say that both things can be true.
No, I don't think that's true in this case, because I think in the NHL, there's different versions of a team playing poorly. There's a team being sloppy and not being prepared and not executing. And then there's when you don't have a good game because of what the other team is doing to you.
Mm.
Right. And I think that's the key thing here. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say the Panthers were at the top of their game, but I think that's because the Canucks were playing really well. Right. The Canucks forced them not to be at the top of their game. So I think it's a double-edged sword, right? Because if you win against a good team 4-0, it's really easy to say like, wow, but they weren't at their best. But then you're just writing off any convincing performance against a really good team. I think the key to understanding why this one was impressive is that the Canucks were able to neutralize a really, really talented, dangerous team. So it might look, if you're just watching the tape, it might look like, well, Florida's not playing that well, but the Canucks deserve the credit for that. They did a really good job of creating that situation.
I thought so too. I don't know if the Panthers, though, were on their game at all. I mean, their power play in particular looked sloppy, right? Now, that said, one area where the Panthers did, in fact, hold serve was at the top of the lineup, right? With Barkov and Forsling on the ice together, the Panthers controlled play, and the Panthers didn't score, but obviously because they didn't score a goal in the game, but they also didn't surrender anything, right? So this is where getting Miller back really helped, too, was Miller was able to withstand those minutes. They were able to throw Miller into those minutes, and then what happens? Even though the Pettersson line kind of lost their matchup, the bottom six ran roughshod over the Panthers' bottom six, and that was the difference in the game.
And absolutely. And so let's transition there into talking about some of the individual performances. And as you mentioned, the bottom six helping them get this win and, you know, staking them to an early lead in the first period. Max Sasson, one of the storylines of the night, picking up a couple of points, two primary assists in the first period. And I really liked especially the play he made on the first goal, attacking the middle of the ice, holding the puck just a beat longer to be able to find Soucy trailing and set up that goal. And a big performance for Max Sasson, a big performance for that fourth line. And really, as we look forward to the Canucks roster situation, I think it's pretty notable that they have all their forwards healthy, and Max Sasson was in the lineup last night with all of their forwards healthy. And really, when you think of it this season, none of the young players that we've seen cycle through the lineup so far, right? Ratu, Baines, even Lekkerimäki for his five-game cameo. None of them have really made the jump from, you know, credible NHL player, like guy who it's fine to have in the lineup, to somebody who can move the needle for you. And somebody who can move the needle even in a fourth line role. Somebody who's not just a credible NHL player, but feels more like a fixture, right? Bottom line production is a huge part of that. Even in a fourth line role, there has to be some ability to make plays. There has to be some ability to contribute offensively when the opportunities are there. And I'm not going to say Max Sasson has made that jump just on the strength of last night, but all of a sudden, you know, he's got four assists in nine games. And when we've been talking about, okay, like, where's the bottom line from Archdeep Baines? Where's the bottom line from Atu Ratu? It really is noticeable, and I think potentially a big deal for his NHL prospects, that he's been able to come in, earn the praise of the coach, and also produce a little bit of bottom line and offense when he's out there.
Yeah, there's a player there. You know, I think without question, because there's the motor, there's a relatively high skill level, right? It, like, fringy skill, but nonetheless, when you combine it with a motor and plus wheels, which he clearly has, you know, watching that Kulikov, watching him beat Kulikov to the puck and sort of generate that shot, that scoring chance off the rush early, midway through the first period, you know, you knew the moment he took that first stride, it was like, oh, Kulikov's out of juice. There's no juice in Kulikov, which, you know, is true anyway, but especially in that moment. And so, yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. I think we need to absolutely gut check this one. Okay. Nine games. Do you want to guess the over under? I'm going to give you 15.5 Max Sasson on ice shooting percentage.
Oh, over
20.5 over under.
Over
22.5 over under.
Over
23.5 over under.
Under.
Over.
Oh.
This guy has 120 PDO.
Let's 90, go.
970 on ice save percentage.
He drives elite percentages.
24% on ice shooting. Okay, so gut check this one. Love to see it. Like the player. Think there's something there. Okay? I'm not penciling him in. He's done enough that he's going to get. This is what's interesting about getting bounces. And in Sasson's case, certainly last night, those two primary assists. I mean, he helped force those turnovers, and he created those scoring opportunities. So I'm by no means saying, or I'm not trying to say that he got lucky, but we saw that Soucy goal. How many times is that play? Does that play result in the opening goal?
Absolutely. Not that often.
And what about the Heinen dribbler, right? So I do think we have to gut check it. I really like Sasson's game. Think he's looking more comfortable. Both him and Rick Tocchet cited holding on to the puck more. He talked about the game slowing down, functioning less on adrenaline as he's become more comfortable. I think we're seeing that. Again, I think there's wheels here. I think there's intelligence here. And I think there's enough skill that maybe the Canucks could be onto something with Sasson. So I'm by no means writing it off. But the bounces have been in his favor to an extraordinary extent. And when that happens, right? You go through the adrenaline part, right? You stick in the lineup because of some things you do well. You get some favorable bounces, and that's going to earn you some rope. And now it's about meaningfully improving, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's where I do still think there's some work here to do, right? The Canucks are not by any means winning Max Sisson's minutes, right? I mean, with him on the ice, 85 minutes now, 5-on-5, 43 shot attempts for, 81 against, right? Goals for, 5-1. So there's work to do here, but I did think that Bluger, Sisson, Heinen line gave us something.
Absolutely.
Gave us something pretty interesting. You know, you throw a speedster with like a long puck battle winner in Heinen and then just Teddy Bluger making every line kind of better.
Mm-hmm.
There's something there. I'm curious to see it for more run, but we do have to, I want to get caught up in the Sisson thing, especially because, well, I do want to get caught up somewhere else.
Okay, but the last thing I'll say is, again, I'm not saying he's made that jump or like, oh, you staple him into the lineup right now for the rest of the season. But the other guys, like Ratu and Baines, haven't even necessarily put themselves in a position to benefit from those bounces in the same way.
Well,
you know what I mean?
So I would disagree with you. I think Ratu has been a far better two-way player. The gap for me is with Max Sisson on the ice.
The getting the bounces.
24, like literally 24 percent on ice shooting clip versus 8.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's it. Like, for me, Ratu, I think, has been ahead.
I think Ratu will figure in at some point, for sure.
And the Baines thing, I think, like, I'm actually a little bit surprised by how frustrated people are. Canucks fans seem to be pretty frustrated with Baines' lack of progress. And again, you're talking about a guy with a sub-7 on-ice shooting percentage, 94.4 PDO, right? Like, huge gap between him and Sisson. At the end of the day, you know, Baines' size, right, and his like puck battle winning ability, the playmaking stuff that he has, it hasn't translated yet. But when you're talking about fringe roster players, you have to bear in mind, like, his path to NHL relevance remains far wider than the like undersized speedster centerman who can't really win draws yet at the NHL level, right?
Yeah.
Like, his path is wider because he's got more pro attributes. And so, again, I'm not moving Sisson ahead of Baines or Ratu. I think that would be a wild overreaction. But I think he's done enough now that he's going to get the opportunity. And I'm absolutely not betting on him seizing that opportunity and, like, continuing to play better hockey over, like, his next 10-game segment. So, lots of fun. Great to see from Max Sisson.
All right, who do you want to get carried away on?
I want to get carried away on Forbert.
Derek Forbert, baby!
No, and Friedman. Okay? Not as like an answer long term to the third pair by any means, but we saw it last year from Friedman with Eric Cole, right? From Friedman with Eric Cole, that pair. What did I say?
Eric Cole.
Oh man, he was so sick.
Former Habs, Eric Cole.
Former Carolina Hurricane. Eric Cole was a one of one power forward outlier. One of the great underrated power forwards of the last 10 years.
That could play forever too.
25 years. Yeah, like him, Keith Tkachuk, and Alex Ovechkin were like the best power forwards of their era. Anyway, last year, there was like this 20-game stretch that the Canucks got from Ian Cole and Mark Friedman. And it was right early in the season during hashtag the start, where they came in and they actually played second pair of minutes, and the Canucks crushed those minutes, won them soundly, and it put the Canucks on top of the standings and really set the pace for them to win the Pacific and have the dream season that they had. If the Canucks can find an answer, just like a non-Hughes pair that can give them 15 games like that,
yeah,
man, that would mean a lot for their chances of like winning the Pacific, which I think is really important for this team to do, because I don't know how much of Vegas and Edmonton you're watching lately, but you know, I think as much as I was talking Sleeping Giant Theory, and I think a lot of people saw last night's game and were like, Sleeping Giant Theory,
they're waking up,
Sleeping Giant Theory, I honestly think my biggest overall concern for the Canucks has very little to do with them. And a lot more to do with, oh no, are they just the third best team?
Do you
in
have
division?
To beat both of those teams to get out of your division?
No. Yeah. I mean, that's the positive spin. I'm saying, are they just the third best team in their division? Right? Like, that to me is the biggest actual concern about this team, because I think they're definitely a very good team, but are they a great team? Are they, and even if they are a great team, are they great enough to be better than McDavid's Oilers and this Vegas team? You know, two teams that have been in the Stanley Cup final pretty recently and remain absolutely at the apex of their powers. So, you know, I think you need to win the Pacific. And what I saw from Forbert and Friedman just to me looked really good. Like, looked like, hey, maybe they can find, and maybe it's not a long term, maybe you don't enter game one of the playoffs feeling really good about it, but can you roll for like 2 months with those guys giving you 53% shot attempts, you know, very few scoring chances, yep. and you're winning those minutes for 15 minutes a night, 5-on-5. Because if you can, and Hughes can keep doing what he can do, man, you are going to be in a very, very good spot to, you know, have that sleeping giant theory play out, to roll along at like a 700 point percentage to challenge for the top of the Pacific.
Yeah. And I do think even, you know, he's only, that was his fifth game of the season last year for Derek Forbort, right? Even when he played a handful of games early in the season and there was frustration brewing with the defense, you tended to see a lot of people like throwing him like, oh, they've got Juulsen and Desharnais and Forbort, and none of them can make a pass or whatever. It's like, Forbort is a different type of player than Juulsen and Desharnais. You know right. what I mean? There is more capability there. It's never going to be flashy. It's never going to be super dynamic, but he has just a little bit of that Ian Cole thing, right? Where it's like he can solve problems at a higher level than guys like Juulsen and Desharnais.
Well, and he moves the puck better.
Exactly.
And I mean, he might be moving the puck better than Carson Soucy, who I thought had a really good game last night, but like a really good game. It was great to see. I felt like it was an exclamation point on what's quietly been Soucy's turnaround. I feel like Soucy's form's been trending in the right direction for like 4 weeks, but last night he gets the goal, played really well, spent a lot of time against Tkachuk, and that, you know, I mean, if Tkachuk, Bennett, and Evan Rodriguez get nothing against you in a lot of minutes, like we doff our cap to you, Carson Soucy. So, but even then, I think Forbert has that feel for pressure thing.
Yes.
That I'm always looking yes. for. And man, I think that matters a ton. Well, you know, I've always been a big Forbert guy.
Yeah, I do think he was like, we were totally, a lot of people were completely underrating the impact he could have. And it's just like third pairing, all of a sudden you laid it out, right? But that matters.
Oh, it matters a ton.
And it's a big deal to get him back.
And then we're talking about their identity game. Hey, you know who's a like key identity guy, man? I'm telling you.
Mark Friedman.
Well, and from at practice, how mm-hmm. he prepares. In the locker room post game, you know, like, he was asked a question about like, you know, how good did it feel to get into a big game, right? And he's just like, man, I'll take any game. We all laugh, right? Like, he got under Barkov and Reinhardt's skin a bit. There were some Panthers players chasing him around. That's why he's mm-hmm. always drawn penalties. He's a master of that dark art. He moved the puck well. He threw a couple big hits. The Brock Besser 3-0 goal, even though Friedman's off the ice by the time it's scored, it's his hit
yep.
that creates the pressure down ice. And then Besser, obviously, I mean, the shot that Besser missed, by the way, the first shot, because it bounces to him and it ends up being somewhat of a fortunate goal. But the shot that he missed just was like the hardest rush shot I think I've seen this season. I was like shocked. I actually need to go see the next gen or the NHL Edge data on it, because I swear that puck was moving like 110. That shot was moving as fast as the radar gun said Philip Peronix was that one time last season. Anyway, I mean, is it a coincidence you get a guy who can help you move the puck, you can get a D who's going to play to some identity, push people, compete hard, and all of a sudden you're getting an identity game out of your team? I don't know, man. I'm not writing it out. I'm not ruling it out. I'm telling you, Friedman, there's something there. There's something there. I know he's undersized. I know he's like underskilled a little bit. He's not like he's not Brännström in terms of how his slickness. I don't know. I'm growing increasingly convicted that there could be some Mike Weaver potential there.
Ooh, wow.
I'm not writing it off. I'm not saying like maybe, hey, Mike Weaver was sick. You know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
And he was in Vancouver and no one cared. Remember? Like he was like
yep.
discarded.
Mm-hmm.
And then he plays, what, 700 more games just being like a top four stud shutdown guy. He never really got the looks because he didn't look like a shutdown guy should look. I'm not saying Mark Friedman's there, but he's on watch for me. He's on, could he have Mike Weaver potential watch for me?
There you go. Okay.
Do you think that's ridiculous?
No, I think it's fair. Okay. Like he plays well every time he comes up to the NHL, and then he just never sticks in the NHL. It's
yeah,
wild. Or he never sticks in the lineup.
Because he's a smaller D.
Yeah.
But he's nasty. He's competent. He moves the puck well. He draws penalties. Like, what does he not do well? No one ever generates against him.
No.
Like at some point, you have to look past traits and just look at, hey, this guy always gets results.
Yeah, and you pair him with a bigger guy like Forbort, right? And,
yeah.
Anyways, okay, we went a little long here.
Dom's not even on the board.
No. We're going to push everything to the next segment. Okay. Don't worry. Because we can't rush through. We got some juicy stuff to get to in the broadsheet. There's still lots to get into from last night's game. We can look ahead to the Bruins tomorrow night as well. The goalie controversy is brewing, Drancer. It's not actually, but we can talk about the goaltending situation. So quickly, just to wrap up the whiteboard here, it's a day off today for the team, so no practice, no updates on that front for you on the lineup notes. Playoff and standings update. As a result of the win last night, Canucks inch up to a 93% chance to make the playoffs. But as you mentioned, Edmonton wins big last night. I think, did Vegas play last night as well?
Oh, yeah.
And win
they,
big?
They yeah. had a, well, no, they had a big comeback.
Right, right.
So first of all, I was watching that game closely. I had so much going on before the Canucks game. I was watching the football game. I was watching Jets, Vegas really closely. They got hellebucked to like high heaven in the first 40 minutes of that game. Like it was maybe the best goaltending performance I've seen all season.
Wow.
Like they had, I think, 20 shots, something like that through the first two periods. I think Winnipeg had like five, and these were not outside. They were like absolutely throttling the Jets inside, and Hellebuck was amazing, and then they still found a way to lose in overtime. Tough for Winnipeg.
So the Canucks 93% chance to make the playoffs. The projected Pacific Division standings at the end of the year per Dom's model: Edmonton at 109 points as they continue to get rolling. Vegas at 105. Canucks at 103. LA, who lost last night, at 101. Yeah. So
LA, who lost last night for the first time in 11 games.
So a tight spread there between the top four teams in the Pacific Division.
And pivoting off that, let's do gambling odds for the Pacific Division. The Vegas Golden Knights plus 150 to win the Pacific Division are favored. The Edmonton Oilers plus 180, right? Dom's model would say there's value there.
Mm-hmm.
Plus 180 to win the Pacific Division. The Canucks and the Kings are tied, plus 450 to win the Pacific Division. So if the sleeping giant theory, if you're subscribing to that theory, if you want to mash the wake up giant button, okay, Canucks have some catching up to do here. In the minds of the betting markets, and in fact.
Well, the Giants got to wake up, use that long stride to make up some ground.
That's the good thing about Giants.
Got that long stride. All right.
The good thing about Giants is they like to sleep.
Uh-huh.
And
Lena's like, okay, enough of this.
And they all play defense for Rick Tocchet.
Maybe one of them not for much longer, though. We'll get into that on the other side here. More coming up. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.